Pseudopod, episode 190, April 16th, 2010. This week's story, Wearing the Dead, by Alan Smale. Hi, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host entity, and this week's story comes to us from Alan Smale. Alan's work has appeared in realms of fantasy and anthologies including Abyss and Apex, Paradox, and Writers of the Future. Alan's day job is working for NASA, studying black holes and neutron stars, which, let's face it, is awesome. He also writes songs and sings bass with a cappella group The Chromatics. This story is an expanded version of Book of Dead Things, published by Twilight Tales in summer 2007, and is narrated by the excellent Chris Johnson. Chris can be found at thesecretlayer.com, whilst Alan can be found at alansmale.com. So, make sure you're prepared to carry the burdens you're given, because I have a story for you. And I promise you, it's true.
Wearing the Dead, by Alan Smale. I got home from school an hour late and roasting in my own juices, sticky with sweat and with angry tears still streaking my cheeks and itching my neck, because I'd been pummeled again at the bus stop and had to walk all the way home, and it was a real hot September day. All I wanted was to go inside and cool off and crawl into my bed and cry some more, but a man I didn't know was sitting on our front step, bold as you please. He had his head in his hands, and he was a great big black guy, so wide I almost couldn't see the house around him. He was feeling the heat, too. His face shone, and the neck and armpits of his orange t-shirt were soaked. I stopped at the curb, uncertain. My mom's crappy old Pontiac wasn't here yet, so she was still at the furniture store, and the guy was blocking my route to my front door. Just when I thought my day couldn't suck any worse. Looking up the sloping lawn at him, I realized how dilapidated the house front was, the door frame warped from the damp and the frequent slamming. I fingered the key in my pocket and wondered if I was safe, even with the whole front yard separating us. He turned to eyeball a Honda as it cruised past the end of our cul-de-sac and spotted me. "What's up, kid?" "Hey. You live here?" "Don't talk to strangers, but what if they're between you and where you're going?" I fumbled for an answer my mom wouldn't belt me for if she found out about it. "Do you?" "Nope," he said. "No, sir." "Then what you doing there?"
"Sitting."
"You one of my mother's drivers?"
"Yep, I guess so."
He peered at me again, maybe noticing the dirty tear streaks.
"You okay?"
I didn't trust him. I'd just fed him a good answer, after all, like a dumbass. "What's her name, then, if you know her? Who is she, and what's the company called, huh?"
"Kim Straker's your mama. We work for Garten Furniture, and you'd be Trevor. You look like her."
"Thanks a lot, big guy. Thing is, that's my house. You gotta let me walk into my house."
"So? Come on up."
"Uh-uh." The phrase from the metro trains floated into my brain. "Please stand clear of the doors." He finally got it.
"Oh, right."
And he stood up, dusted off his jeans, and shambled down the lawn to the road, while I backed up to preserve the distance between us.
"Your mama's got to help me, Trevor," he said. "Don't know where else to turn. Things are real bad."
I sprinted for the door. He didn't run at me, just stood there with his hands jammed deep in his pockets. I felt dumb for rushing, but I sure breathed easier once that door was slammed and locked behind me. I flipped on the air conditioning unit in the window and craned my head around it to look outside. He wasn't in front of the house anymore. I ran upstairs to Mom's room and didn't see him from there either. Damn, where was he at? Out back? Under the windows, so close to the house I couldn't see him? In the house somehow? "You don't scare me, dipshit," I yelled. Nobody called back. I looked around some more, but I still couldn't see him. I heard Trixie, though, dead but far from gone. The pitiful sack of potatoes dragging of her hindquarters, the scraping clatter of her front paws on the cellar steps. She mewled softly like a kitten, panting with that stupid dead poodle grin, chilling my spine. Today sucked hard. I should have stayed in bed from the get-go.
as if Mom would have let me. I jammed my fingers into my ears against the dog's misery and kept on running from window to window, but I never did catch sight of the black guy anymore. Mom came home with a headache, and the first mail she opened was Bill's, so it was cuss words and one cigarette after another, and I stayed real quiet. There was no mileage in telling her about the big guy. I could get into trouble for talking to a stranger or for being so rude to him that he went away, and either would get me whacked upside the head. Maybe he would never come back, and if he didn't, then nobody needed to know he was ever here in the first place. Mom worked in the office of a furniture warehouse, dispatching drivers to make deliveries and keeping track of what had gone out on the trucks and what was still in store waiting. She shared the office with a woman called Jill Diz Bennett, who was all braids and sass and hands-on hips. While school was out for summer and I had to be in the office, Jill Diz was always nice to me, but Mom didn't like it when I talked to her. She said Jill Diz was a point scorer and a tramp and nothing but trouble. But I never understood why that meant I couldn't say hi. I'd seen plenty of the drivers this summer. The warehouse was stifling, and they often begged to come stand in the office for just a couple of minutes under the air conditioning. Big, brawny guys, but always polite to my mom, even when they were scoping her out, and Jill Diz, too. Jill Diz even more, I think, because she was the same color as they were, and she had very smooth, shiny skin and lots of it showing. I didn't recognize the man on our doorstep as one of those drivers, but one big sweaty guy in a skull cap looks pretty much the same as another. I sure recognized him when he came back at 6, though. When the doorbell rang, I was up and out of my chair in a moment. Not many people came to call at our house. I glanced at him through the small glass side panels, and he gazed back, and I ran to Mom, who was in the kitchen, leaning against the fridge with a small glass of something in her hand. "What now, Trev? I'm busy." "Big black guy at the front door. One of your drivers, maybe." "Which one?" "Hell if I know," I said. Mom muttered a word I didn't like and followed me into the living room. "So what, you just left him there on the step?" "He's a big guy," I said. "For God's sake, Trevor, you open the door, ask their names, who's calling, please, one moment. It's polite." "I was being careful." "You're scared of every goddamn thing," she said, opening the door, and recognized him straight off. "What the hell you doing here, Robbie Dax?" He glanced back over his shoulder at the street. "Sorry, Miss Skim. Got a problem. Don't know where else I can go." That's how he said it. Skim, like the milk. She fixed him with an unblinking stare. "This for real?" "Yes, ma'am. I can't go home." She closed her eyes. "You better not be shitting me, Dax." "All right, then." And she opened the door wide enough for all of him to come inside. Even though I was halfway across the room, it felt like he was looming over me. "Hi, Trevor," he said. My mind went blank. "Who's calling, please?" Mom sighed. "I swear the kid's retarded. Come into the kitchen, Robbie." The heck with that. As soon as they closed the kitchen door, I scooted on over. Robbie Dax was 6 inches taller than Mom, and twice her height. Eavesdropping is wrong, but I had to be sure Mom was okay. Robbie Dax was saying, "And Skim, I told him I wouldn't sell that shit no more, and that was that, and he could get off my porch right now." "That wasn't too bright, Robbie. You should have kept your fucking mouth shut. Christ, don't look at me like that. I worry about you. You know I do." God, my mom had a mouth like a toilet. Robbie said, "Man's got to make a stand, Skim. Carrying too many tombstones on my back already." I went to my room. I tiptoed past the open cellar door, neck prickling with fear, but I didn't see any sign of Trixie. Not yet, but it wasn't even dark yet. I knelt on the bed and rested my forehead on the pillow. My heart was still pumping kind of fast. It wasn't just the guy's size that freaked me out, or even his foul language. It was this. Aside from the plumber, Robbie Dax was the first man to set foot in our house since my dad died. I cried when Dad passed away, and it seemed like I'd been crying ever since. The last thing he said to me was, "Be strong for your mama." He surely meant that ironically. My guess is that I'd been strong for maybe 10 seconds, but I was only 8 years old, so it was a tall order to begin with. He died in a hospital bed with no hair left and the scrawny throat and patchy skin of a 90-year-old, though he must have been under 30. No one would tell me which cancer was killing him, and since Mom never mentioned him now, I didn't dare ask. What I mainly remember from that night is crying endlessly. I was sure my heart was going to split in two and the pieces come squeezing down my arms and out my fingertips. That feeling I'd never forget. Also, I remember Mom trying to gather the strength to drive home, leaning her head back so the tears wouldn't make her mascara run, lighting each cigarette from the smoldering butt of the last, saying, all right then, but never standing up to take me away from the hospital room with its dingy, peeling walls. In 1 year, my dad and then Trixie, the dead dog, the dead damned dog. Mom appeared in my doorway half an hour later. Come get to know Robbie. I got to dig out some stuff for him. And try not to say anything dumb shit. He's our guest. Right, I said. Nothing about Dad is what she meant. She reached out and grabbed my chin, pulling my face upwards. You been crying again? No, I said. For Christ's sake, Trev, she said, and left. She'd closed the cellar door in passing, and everything was quiet, so I didn't have to worry about Trixie, just about Robbie Dax. Hey, Trevor. Hey again, Mr. Robbie. I'm here to be polite.
Well, he said, me too.
Please, won't you sit down? He sat down. May I get you something to drink?
No, he was just fine.
Man, he was immense. How much did he eat?
I didn't let on about me being here earlier, he said. Figured that'd be best for you.
Uh-huh. I mean, yes, thank you. That was most considerate.
Your mom says you read a lot, he said.
I stared back down the corridor towards Mom's bedroom with some desperation.
You smoke, he said. Drink?
I looked at him. No?
That's good. Don't you start up doing those things, whatever anyone tries to tell you.
No, sir. Trixie's dead claws scrabbled faintly against the wooden stairs. The hairs on my arm came alive. It was clear Robbie hadn't heard a thing. What the heck could I say next? I see you have tattoos.
Yep, he said, and pushed up the sleeve on his right arm. Check this out.
They were hard to figure, dark shadows against his black skin. Against my better judgment, I was intrigued. I stepped forward. It was a Celtic knot in a thick, swirly pattern that went all around his bicep. He pushed up his left sleeve to show the silhouette of a heart with a long dagger thrust through it, ornamented with scrollwork. Neat, I said. Got any more? Robbie hesitated, and I realized what a potentially stupid question that had been. Then he grinned in a strange, sad way and hitched up his shirt to show me his back. I was so shocked and startled that for a moment the whole world went hazy. Earlier, he hadn't been using a figure of speech. The man had gravestones etched in dark ink all over his back. Put your shirt on, Robbie Dax. He looked at Mom as she walked into the room carrying two bottles of Bud.
Didn't mean anything by it.
I know. Put it on. Trev, you hungry? I got made SpaghettiOs and packed off to bed so Mom and Robbie could drink the beers and eat proper food and talk some more. In my room, I gazed at the wall, too frightened to even blink. I awoke just after 2 a.m. with Trixie scratching at the cellar door, needing to go out. Dad had made it very clear. Trixie was my pet and my responsibility. Besides, Mom couldn't hear Trixie since she died, so it was all down to me. It's a little nervy getting up in the middle of the night to let a ghost dog out to do her business. I dallied a little, pulling on my shorts and t-shirt. I stuck my nose around the door. If Trixie really has to, she can pass right through the cellar door. Old dog, new trick. But tonight, she was nowhere to be seen. She was out there, somewhere. I marched to the cellar door and yanked it open. Trixie wasn't there. So I padded to the end of the hallway, peeked around the corner into the living room, and jumped about 10 feet in the air when the voice came.
Don't you be spying on me, Trev. I seen you there. Come on in or go away.
Robbie Dax lying on the couch with a blanket over him. My throat constricted. Wasn't spying. Didn't know you stayed. I was looking for my dog? Homework. His voice went gentle.
You afraid of me, Trev?
I ain't afraid. He was grinning. I could tell from his tone.
R2.
I took a deep breath, walked across the room to him. I'm not.
Well, you should be, said Robbie Dax, because you don't know me, and I could be anybody at all.
My mom trusts you, obviously.
That's no guarantee.
I frowned at him. You've had plenty of time to do something bad if you were going to. But, you know, I'm the man of the house now my dad is gone, and I do want to know what you're doing here, Robbie Dax, and why you call my mom Skim, and why you have a graveyard on your back. My mom says I'm afraid of everything, but I'm not. The gravestones represented deaths among his family and friends. Street deaths, drug deaths, stupid deaths. He told me about some of them, there in the creeping darkness. Some of them had been his fault, Robbie Dax's fault, because of the stuff he'd been selling. It was awful. I had to keep remembering to breathe. And he was talking like he'd forgotten I was just a kid. I swallowed, and my throat made a funny little noise, and he came back to himself.
Sorry, he muttered, his head back in his hands. Sorry, Trevor. I shouldn't have said all that stuff.
I reached out then and almost touched his shoulder with my shaking fingertips, but he recoiled as if I was holding a snake.
What the hell are you doing?
Nothing, I said.
Don't feel sorry for me, at all. These gravestones on my back, that's the point. They're so nobody feels sorry for me ever again.
Right, I said.
And anyway, you don't touch nobody. You're a man now. You don't go sitting on strangers' knees or letting them touch you. Not at all. Not unless your mama says it's okay, and if it don't feel right to you, not even then.
I know all about that. I got good instincts. He sighed.
Trev, I ain't gonna do nothing bad to you. But you don't know that, your own self.
Yes, I do.
And don't be looking for me to be your daddy. I don't know nothing about that.
He had no call to mention my dad. I drew back. Anything else I can't do?
Your mama comes in, sees you sitting on my bed. Now what's she gonna think?
Now he was using words I understood. She'd pitch a fit.
Don't be trusting what you think you know. Not till you're a heck of a lot older than what you are now, you hear?
Yes, sir. But what I heard was the dragging sound start up in the hallway. The hair on my shoulders prickled and all down my legs. Robbie saw my face change.
What? What's the matter?
It's my dog, I said. Trixie. I could hear the clatter of her front paws on the hardwood floor, the sliding of her paralyzed back end. I could hear her breathing, the shallow panting over a lolling tongue. I could smell her dead stink. She was through the cellar door, and she was coming for me. Closer to the corner, and closer still, and that chill that preceded her, that icy aura that all the walking dead must radiate, stealing the heat from the air around them and sucking it into the pale abyss of the ghost world. My mouth was instantly dry.
Ain't no dog here, said Robbie Dax.
I went to Robbie then, knelt up on the couch right by him to get my feet off the floor. I was shaking. Some nights I can do what I have to, but the slithering, inevitable approach of Trixie on top of all those tales of senseless, callous street death.
Hey now, what was I just telling you?
I know, I said. Shut up. This is an emergency. And she came around the corner, her paws first, then her white poodle face, her topknot, and the rest of her dragging behind, her doubly lifeless butt with her back legs splayed to either side of it, flat on the hardwood floor and dragging pitifully. Tongue hanging out, breathless, she did the littlest of panting happy barks when she saw us. I swear, Trixie doesn't even know she's dead. I glanced at Robbie. You don't see her? She's right where you're looking. If anyone else could see Trixie, it would be Robbie, who walked within a finger's touch of death every day.
Sure don't, Trev.
She leaned forward, gamely putting her front weight into dragging her hind weight along, panting happily in recognition.
Well, that's because she's dead, I said. She's haunting me. I gotta let her out. Wait here.
Robbie shrugged, bemused.
Don't you ever laugh at me about this, I said, or I'll kick your ass.
I stepped off the couch. Close up, I could see the blood matting the fur on her nose and right ear, and clear across her right side, white bone shards jutting out from her poor, fuzzy head. Above the panting mouth, her gaze was blank. Every time I see the wreckage of Trixie, I cry like it's the first time. But I have a responsibility. As I stood watching her pee in the front yard, I dried my eyes. It's lucky Trixie's a she, since girl dogs pee sitting down anyway. A male dog would have about driven himself crazy trying to cock his back leg. Waiting for her to drag herself back in, my fear faded. As she brushed past me, I breathed, "I'm sorry, Trixie." She curled up on the mat. I stepped over her. Robbie blinked at me, baffled, as I sat back down.
"Don't tell Mom, okay? Swear solemnly you won't tell."
I swear.
"I'm not crazy, Robbie. I'm the only one who sees her. She's haunting me because of what I did."
He scratched his back.
"Sure thing."
And it poured out of me. How Trixie had been hit by a truck and dragged herself home. How Dad took her to the vet but couldn't bear to have her put down. Dad was already diagnosed by then and felt a strong bond with his stricken dog. Mom shouted at first about the messes the poor disabled poodle made, but then backed down because Dad was sick. And even once Dad was gone, Mom couldn't bear to take my dog away too. A rare instance of maternal compassion. I took a long, jagged breath. Robbie knew almost all of it now. I figured I may as well tell him the rest. Trixie had survived a pickup truck, only to be polished off by steps. I'd been in the living room with Carl from my class. We weren't big pals, but we hung together some. He liked to come round. He said his parents didn't like him and his sisters wouldn't speak to him, but that's all I knew. Our deal was that he didn't ask about Dad, and I didn't ask about his family. Actually, I think Carl came to watch my mom. This was pretty soon after Dad died, when Mom would walk around the house in a daze wearing just a strappy top and a pair of Dad's old boxer shorts. I'd be embarrassed because she was drunk and she had freckles all over her shoulders and saggy arms, but Carl would gape at her like she was a supermodel. Sometimes he'd see quite a bit of Mom that she either didn't know she was showing or just didn't care. She'd offer him a glass of milk, and he'd almost drop it because he wasn't looking at what she was handing him. So Carl came for the show, but I didn't care, as long as he'd be my friend. He thought Trixie was kind of funny, and when he was around, I saw the humor of it too. Since I had company, Mom had put all Trixie's dog toys in the cellar to get her out of the way. So off to the cellar she went to find them. Carl and I heard her go down the first step. Bump. The second step. Bump. Another. Bump. I looked at Carl, and we both started to smile in anticipation. We were just kids, but I should have known. If I'd run, I might have made it there in time to scoop her up and save her. I see it in my mind's eye, Trixie panting earnestly, best feet forward, taking the steps down with one forepaw and then the other, and her crippled hindquarters sliding to the side, coming down a step, bump, then another, bump. The scrabbling of her front paws as she tried to level herself off, clatter-clat, and then the dead weight of her rear overtaking her, dragging Trixie into a tumble, rolling over and over, out of control, bump-bump, ba-dum-bump-bump, dump-dump, and then a silence as she flew through the air and a wet, and final thud-clang as she hit the concrete floor at the foot of the steps and rolled into the mess from Dad's various home improvement projects. Spare tiles, sheetrock, half-empty paint cans. I waited for a bark or even a whine and heard only silence. In my heart, I think we knew, even then, that she must be dead. But the sound of it was so comical, the pathos of her doom, the sheer banana-peel slapstick force of it, and we were boys and cruel, and we stared at each other for a single moment of horror, and then I laughed. And freed up, Carl laughed too. and we laughed till we howled. I couldn't help myself. I really couldn't. When I stood and tiptoed downstairs to pick up the pitiful corpse, when I felt how cold Trixie was, how broken, how sad, I stopped smiling. I looked up the steps, and Carl was crying, standing in the doorway as I cradled Trixie's head, her blood slick on my bare arm, her bones poking out. Embarrassed, chilled, trying to make it all stop, I said, "Hey, Carl, come on, man. She was only a dog." He turned, flicking teardrops onto the walls of the stairwell, and he ran and ran, and he never came to my house again.
"That's low," said Robbie quietly. "Laughing when your dog dies, Trev? That's low and mean." "Damn, Trevor."
"I didn't know any better."
"Sure you fucking did."
I came out of the story and back to the nighttime living room and found my face hot and my stomach gripped with a huge ache. Robbie thought I was a monster. This man who had dealt drugs and had gravestones tattooed into his flesh, I horrified him. "I've cried since," I said. "Often. Always." Robbie looked carefully at the corridor, listening perhaps, and then he said, "Come here." And I did, and Robbie gave me a hug for about 8 seconds, and I sobbed, and ghostly Trixie watched me mournfully from the floor with her pathetic head resting between her forepaws. Then Robbie let go when we sprang apart. He said, "It's okay, Trev. Go on back to bed now."
"When I'm old enough, I want tattoos," I said. "Two of them. Will you take me?"
"Maybe," said Robbie Dex.
As I walked past Trixie, I heard her get up onto her front paws and pad drag herself after me. I didn't turn. I just got myself back down the hallway to my bed and heard Trixie stretch herself across the doorway to protect me. And I fell asleep. "Give me your key."
"What?"
I raised my head an inch off the pillow and squinted. "Robbie'll be staying here a while." I knew my mom was waiting for me to object, so I just leaned over to my bedside table and handed over my door key, calm as you like. If she was surprised, she didn't show it. "And don't you tell anyone that Robbie is staying here. It's nobody's business." "Fine with me." I waited for her to go away, but she leaned in further and said, "This is important, Trevor." "He'd just better be here when I get home," I said, and let her try to guess what I meant. My penance was a two-sided coin. Trixie was tails, Carl was heads. He liked to trip me on the stairs at school. Many times I'd gone tumbling and crashing to the bottom. It was his joke, his cruel commemoration of our secret, Carl's way of getting back at me for having seen him cry over a dog that wasn't even his. Today I should have seen it coming, but I had a lot on my mind, and I was tired from the long midnight talks with Robbie. Carl and Zeke strolled down the stairs towards me. Zeke was Carl's new friend. Zeke's older brothers were gang members with guns and all, and Zeke would be one too when he was old enough. I guess Zeke helped Carl to feel mean. As I lay there at the bottom of the steps, Zeke wound up and pretended to kick me in the head, but didn't touch me more than a tap with his steel-toed boot. I cried anyway, and they laughed and hawked up some spit onto me and walked away.
"Don't show fear, man," said Robbie.
It was 2 a.m., and I just let the dog out.
"They know when you're scared."
"So? If I talk back to them or act tough, they get me even worse."
"Uh-huh," he said. "They don't hate you like you think. If they did, they'd have messed you up bad already. You're just easy meat. If it gets to be work, they'll go pick on someone else."
"I don't think so."
"Trev," he said, "who you think you're talking to? I ain't guessing. I know. For 10 years, I ate little snots like you for lunch."
I stared. I was heading for the school bus when Carl and Zeke jumped me, tossing me into the wall hard enough to bounce my head off it. As I sagged against the brick, Zeke faked a lunge to my eyes with the index and middle fingers of his left hand, then laughed like a maniac when I screamed and jerked my head aside. I waited for a second to see if they were done, but they obviously weren't. "Okay, then."
Robbie Dax, I'm trusting you. What the fuck you doing? I said. Shit for brains?
Yeah? Said Carl in disbelief. Zeke smiled. I put myself in his face. You'd better not dick with me, or my mom's new boyfriend is gonna chew you a new asshole.
Oh, yeah? He's a big guy. You do not want to piss him off.
So where'd this badass motherfucker come from?
They got a big laugh out of the MF word, under the circumstances.
I laughed too, then said, he come from nowhere, man, but he'll mess you up bad if you don't stay the fuck away from me.
Zeke said, your mama beat Kim Straker down at Garten?
Yeah.
Skinny white bitch. Black badass had split your mama's skinny ass in two.
My mom, I said with total conviction, is tough.
He not wrong, said Carl. She want tough bitch, nice tits. If she didn't stink of whiskey, she'd be hot.
What's his name then, this big old badass?
None of your fucking business.
Yeah, said Zeke. Then he inexplicably laughed and pounded me on the shoulder.
You okay, Trev? You the man.
And that was it. They just walked away. Zeke already getting out his cell phone to call his homies. I figured they'd forgotten me in a second. How wrong I was. I got home from school on time. The school bus dropped me at the end of our cul-de-sac, and I jived up to my house, beaming like a fool. Robbie stood on our front step in his orange t-shirt, fixing up the front door. Even with his big bulk in the way, I could see how he'd replaced the warped wood, primed and painted the frame. It looked like $1 million. Mom stood in the driveway, arms folded, wearing a look of startled pleasure.
Well, shit, I said. Here's Robbie Dax getting between me and my front door again.
They swiveled to look at me.
Trev, said Mom, who'd never heard the S-word out of my mouth before today. She didn't know me at all.
Hey, said Robbie. What's up?
Everything's up. I've got it all going on. I'm the man.
Robbie glanced at Mom.
That right?
I stood up to him, just like you told me. Damned if it didn't work out just fine. I was proud of myself and proud of Robbie. In 5 days, he'd taught me more about looking out for myself than my mom had in the 3 years since Dad died. And it looked like he was sticking around. You don't fix up a front door you're not planning to use.
Oh, Mom, newsflash. I was being bullied at school, but now I'm not.
Robbie looked surprised, but gratified.
Well, that's cool.
Look what Robbie did, said Mom, changing the subject, of course. But you know what? It didn't matter. I didn't need her approval.
Looks great, I said, walking up the lawn.
Robbie looked back at the door.
Yeah, he said,
and then allowed himself a little more rightful pride in his work.
Yeah, okay.
I pounded him on the back.
Okay.
And that's how come we were all facing away from the street. The gangsters must have coasted around the corner with the engine off, because the roar of the semi-automatic was the first thing we heard. But Robbie, he must have had an instinct about it, because even as I felt the first bullets thud into him, he was already throwing me down to the ground. The bullets lifted him up, big guy that he was, and smashed him against the house. He shook like he was shivering, like he was cold. His mouth was wide, but he never made a sound, not one that I heard anyway, over the clatter of bullets spraying the front of my house and my mom's shrieking. The car's engine roared into life, and it did a sliding 180 on the street, an old black bashed-up Mercedes with guys in hoods leaning out the back windows, like a movie or something. Then they were gone, tire squealing towards town. It seemed to happen so slowly, but it was over so fast. I got to my feet. Mom still stood in the driveway, screaming, hands clutching her hair, so I knew she was all right. Robbie was not all right. He was blown apart across the middle and bleeding like a fire hose. Blood across the door and the siding, blood trickling down the driveway to the street, blood all over everywhere. His head cracked open from the force of being flung against our house. He was dead already. Robbie couldn't be gone. He couldn't. Not like this. I knelt by his side, the gunshot still ringing in my head. His orange t-shirt was rucked up, tombstones glowing black against his coffee skin. I pushed the shirt up further and put my hand over a tombstone, and my heart welled up. In an instant,
It had filled my whole chest. I felt it pushing down my bowels, squeezing through my arms, like scarlet pulsing toothpaste, ready to blow my hands off, about ready to explode. Mom walked slowly up the driveway. Perhaps I expected her to throw herself across him and cradle his head in her hands, or scoop me up and say, "Thank God you're alive, Trev. For a moment I thought I'd lost you forever." She didn't do any of that. She just stood like a rail, looking down at the blasted body of Robbie Dax, and then she tilted her head to stare at me with giant, horrified eyes. "What have you done?" she whispered. "Me?" I said. "You stupid shit," she said, and again, screaming louder than the guns, slamming her fist into the air in front of my face with every word. "You stupid shit! What have you done?" I got it then. Of course it was me. I'd given him away. It was Zeke's brother's gang that Robbie had been hiding out from all along. Even without a tattoo, I'd wear Robbie Dax's death burned into my back for the rest of my life. I heard Trixie tumbling down the stairs to her doom. Bomp, bomp, ba-bomp, loud in my ears. Ba-bomp, ba-domp, domp. But I didn't need clues. I knew what I had to do. Reggie's body cooled at my feet. Mom looked at me in fury and desperation for me to explain, apologize, cry, anything. But that wouldn't help. When I cried, I failed, like I'd failed when Dad died. Now, above all, I had to be brave. Robbie couldn't be allowed to leave us. Without him, Mom and I would kill each other. She was almost set to kill me right now. There was only one way to raise Robbie from the dead and keep him close by my side. I looked into my mother's blazing eyes, inches from my own, and I laughed.
We all live with ghosts. Every room in every building on the planet is full of echoes of every conversation, every kiss, every birth, every death, every argument that's ever taken place there. A lot of the time, those ghosts are invisible, impersonal. The rest of the time, they're all we can see. We all come to crossroads in life, and what none of us realize is that the road we don't take stays with us, whispers in our ear about what could have been. Maybe if you had taken that job, maybe if you hadn't gone to that party, maybe if you had kissed her, or him, maybe if you hadn't. We trail possibilities behind us, like Marley trailed his chain, and sometimes it feels just as heavy and just as damning. We all carry the dead on our backs, but for most of us, it's dead paths, dead roads, dead universes that whisper that if we had chosen them, our lives would be so much better. Maybe so, maybe not, but they're still there, and they always will be. So listen to them. Use them. I am slowly starting to realize that things I don't think I want to do, with the notable exception of alcohol, drugs, yes, that's right, gentle listener, your intrepid host is kind of straight edge, and self-trepanation are usually the sort of thing I should be doing. In fact, in some cases, they're the sort of thing I should have done years ago. Because, much like the whispers on Lost, those voices actually offer some useful advice, and, unlike the whispers on Lost, they're not at least partially down to a time-slipping version of myself giving me advice from the jungle. At least I don't think that, though. In one of those universes, down one of those ghost roads, there's a place where you didn't donate to Pseudopod. It's a dark, dingy place, a universe at war with another and losing, where Charlie Francis's face is scarred, Nazi Germany won World War II, and I'm fairly sure we all have goatee beards. Do you really want to live there? Really? Because if you don't, I'd go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod, because I can feel the goatee growing in. Seriously. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod is still living with your ghost, lonely and dreaming of the West Coast.